Welcome to RSN's Racing Pulse.
Wettor, the outside near Merriam. Wettor's in, fires back to back for Wettor. Wettor won the Durban Cup. Giga Kick on the outside, trying hard. Later's Marzu, knuckling down. Giga Kick now takes over, mating. Giga Kick's won the 10,000. Stroke of luck on the outside, but Kovalik with 100 metres left to go. Well clear in the derby, and Kovalik is too good. Kovalik is one.
The mare is going to come away, Luna Flair, and get her spot in Australia's most iconic race, the Cup. Luna Flair won it by 5 lengths, White Barber.
For the next 3 hours, the breaking racing news, the stories, opinion, the mail, and the people who make racing happen. Here's Michael Felgate.
Welcome to Racing Pulse. It's been a big morning so far, and it's been a huge weekend. Looking forward to having your company for the next 3 hours. We've got a lot to discuss. The Group 1 win in the Oaks, Damien Oliver, once again, the GOAT, as he is known. 128th Group 1 victory. How many more, I wonder, does he have left in his remarkable career? We'll have a chat to Ollie on the program this morning. Speaking of the Queensland races, has Munamek become a dark horse? A late entry into the Stradbroke after his big win last week. Nick Ryan has done an outstanding job getting him back after a freshen. We will have a chat to Nick Ryan this morning. And the headline performance at Flemington on Saturday may well have been a two-year-old called Sepati. And we're going to have a chat to Paul Prushka. There's some luminaries, including Rick McIntosh, in the ownership. Gee, he was dominant down the straight. It was a nice winter's race day at Flemington. And we've had some huge world action. Frankie Dettori putting on a show at Epsom, winning the Oaks in the Group 1 coronation, and then, of course, the Epsom Derby as well. Good races in Hong Kong, over in Japan. Damien Lane almost winning a Group 1. As always, we want your thoughts and SMS. You can win a $100 voucher to Ribera's today for the best contribution. Text us 0416 90 50 52. The Shark is here, and so is Matty Stewart. How are we, gents?
Good, mate.
Still somewhat traumatised by yet another gallant North Melbourne defeat yesterday, Michael.
I saw a spirited text exchange between you two last night.
There was some choice words flying around Shark Towers, and that was just Hazel. So, you know,
Hazel's been a bit like that for a while now.
She teeters on the, brink of insanity when North Melbourne's in a close game. So, unfortunately, there's been too many losses. Well, too many L's and not enough W's,
You should be used to the heartbreak in the footy. How'd you go on the punt?
I actually didn't play. I went, made the decision to get out on the boat and chase some calamari, which are going very, very well at the moment. And so thick was the action, I was preoccupied. I was listening to the races, though, and very much enjoyed that. That's a nice little view there, Matty.
Yeah, I'm just showing Shark. I was so impressed with the weather yesterday. I went and stood out in the jetty at Mordialloc in the most gorgeous morning you've ever seen yesterday, and I thought about Shark and his fishing pursuits. I thought Flemington was a great day for the consolidation of Blake Shin. You know, he's been massive in Victoria. Celine Gaudry, is she the next? I'm not going to say dot, 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 but is she the next? Dot, dot, dot. Kieran McAvoy was massive in Sydney.
5 winners in Sydney.
He has been a bit invisible lately. I reckon that was a big, big, big day for Kieran McAvoy. And of course, the GOAT up in Brisbane and the French Derby, the English Derby, all happening overseas.
Damien Oliver winning Oaks in Queensland. And then you've got Frankie Dettori. Big Frankie Dettori on this ridiculous...
A lot of goats around on the weekend in the jockey ranks, weren't there?
Goat central.
We'll talk more about that a little later, but there is the parallel, isn't there, between Frankie and Ollie in their own jurisdictions, about the same age. Never been more successful jockeys in their rightful homelands as well. So, Frankie, when you're watching what he did over the weekend, you go, why are you retiring? Why are you retiring?
Going out in the high is not a bad thing either, though, is it?
You get that distinct feeling, isn't it? It's on his terms, and he's not limping to the finish line. He's charging along, and We'll have making a lot of younger jockeys look, you know, look very much second rate.
Well, we'll have a chat to Ollie about this, but do you wonder, Ollie's his own man. He's been his own man his whole career. He's very focused and driven, but I wonder if he looks at what Frankie is doing overseas and says, that's a pretty nice way to wind down a remarkable career.
Don't know how he replicates Frankie's route, though, like, because Frankie's got the international connections with Gos and then goes to America and then he comes back. I don't think Ollie could do a global whistle-stop tour.
No, no, you'd be doing it here in a spring carnival.
Well, maybe he's doing it now, you know.
He did allude to something very interesting at the end of Channel 7's coverage on Saturday, which we'll play as well. Now, Sharky, you've got another bee in your bonnet. We're saying it's 128 Group 1 wins for Damien Oliver, and it was outstanding. But I want you to tell us about the depth of that race after we listen to what Ollie was able to do on a Makura.
Looming up is Emakura, though. Emakura on the outside taking over. Emakura's coming right away for Damien Oliver. And Emakura's brewing in the Queensland Oaks. Emakura's won. Second Rio. Third, no one a deal.
He was at his best, Ollie. It was a classic ride, saving all the ground. And Emakura was the strongest stayer, this lightly raced daughter of Kermadec. And it was pretty easy in the end. And once again, it is time to say congratulations to Damien Oliver for another Group 1 victory. He's 128th. How are you, Ollie?
Good, thanks, Michael.
Did you think you had that race in your keeping a long way out? Because it was a pretty confident ride, especially coming up to the turn. You looked like you were travelling sweetly.
Yeah, well, I drew an inside gate and I was a fair way back in the field. It was a truly run race and I needed a little bit of luck getting through, and I thought there might be some tiring horses coming to the turn, but they managed to keep going for a little while to take us into the straight, and it opened up beautifully for us. So I was able to save a lot of ground, and, you know, she's a strong staying type of filly, and, you know, saving that ground on the turn and having an uninterrupted run really, you know, helped us seal victory.
Hey, Damien, just late in your career, how nice is it to get out of Victoria and sort of just remind people elsewhere of what you bring to the table? Was it just a nice little departure from town, from Victoria, to nail one at this stage of your career up there?
Yeah, it was great. I haven't been to Queensland much in recent times. And, you know, it was good to get a call up from Chrissy Lees, who's been a... you know, a good friend and a great supporter over the years. We've had a lot of success together. So he took a bit of twisting my arm to go up there, actually, because I've been in Adelaide the last 4 weeks and was kind of nearly ready just to stay home. But I'm glad he pushed for me to go. And, yeah, it was fantastic.
He's an underrated trainer to a degree, isn't he, Ollie? I know he sort of gets along and gets plenty of good horses through his stable, but you look back at some of the, particularly the fillies and mares that he's had, Samantha Mears and horses like that. He really knows the key to getting the best out of the girls.
Yeah, he does. I think he has a lot of horses in training, and but when he does get a good one, he's really good at you know, nailing target races, which, you know, a lot of good trainers are, but Chris especially, and, you know, he's just a ripping bloke as well, which is makes it even better.
I know we've asked you this question in a roundabout way a million times, but 128 Group 1 winners. There's great trainers who never trained one, and there's very, very, very good jockeys who, Jamie Mott, who just got his first, you know. Do you wonder how, when you reflect on your career, how you've found the time to ride 128 Group 1 winners?
well, I think being based in Australia for most of my career has sort of helped, and... You know, when you're at the top end of the jockeys, you do get some great opportunities to ride in those big races. I've had some success overseas too, but probably not spending too long a period of time overseas has helped me to be able to get that to that sort of number. But it's a number that you know, I'm proud of, and I recognise that it's not easy to get to, especially later in your career when you don't get as many opportunities as you were when you were younger in those big races.
I think you proved on Saturday, though, you're still riding in that type of form. Do you think that you are riding as well as you have been?
Yeah, I've had a good year. Probably not a great year by my standards, but, you know, I understand as you get older that the next generations are coming through, so you expect those guys to get some more opportunities. I've had a lot of placings this year. I think, you know, probably 30 more seconds and thirds than winners. So, you know, if you take some of those out to first, you know, I'd probably up there... towards the top of the Jockeys Premiership. So that's been a little frustrating, but I still feel like I'm riding well, and, you know, if I get on the right horse, I can certainly get the job done.
We were talking at the start of the show about how your career and Frankie Dettori's career have similar elements, similar age, similar GOAT status in different jurisdictions, but he's on a whistle-stop farewell tour. What do you think of when you think of Frankie Dettori's career and this final sort of amazing chapter of his career, Ollie, when you look at it from afar?
Well, we all know what a star Frankie is, a great rider all around the world. You know, his probably record in Australia hasn't been as good as he's elsewhere, but, you know, for a guy to be at the top of his game for so long around the world, it's just extraordinary, and it's a fitting farewell for him. You know, Frankie is the real showman, and, you know, for him to go out in this sort of style is fantastic to see him still getting those great opportunities in big races, and even better to see him delivering on the big stage.
As a contemporary of his, Ollie, how closely are you following this last lap that he's putting on at the moment?
I'm not a big follower of international racing, sort of. I actually managed to watch the English Derby on the weekend, but I do look at the results and then follow up and watch a little bit of the racing, but I'm not a huge follower of international racing, I must admit.
I was watching Seven's coverage on the weekend, the tail end, and it was great that you were able to join the team, but you did leave everyone hanging a little bit, and I know this is something that you hate to discuss, but this was your response to, I think, when Bruce or Richo asked you about what the next few months or the rest of your career looks like leading into spring.
I haven't made any decisions on my future yet, but I'm still enjoying my riding, and you know, I'm going to have a holiday over winter, and we'll see how we go, but I haven't ruled anything out yet.
So you can't be retiring, Ollie, before spring, surely?
I think they were trying to get one out of me. They keep seem to keep asking me, but as I said, I haven't made any decisions. I'm really, really looking forward to going on a holiday. I don't like the winter too much in Melbourne, so it'll be nice to get out for a bit of a break, some warm weather, and... as I said, I haven't made any decisions on what I'm going to do yet.
128's a wonky number too. I remember Black Caviar, 25 from 25 and all that. 128's just incomplete in some way. Where are you off to, Ollie, with the surfboard?
No, I'm going to play some golf this year. Going to the US to play some golf and go to the US Open. And, looking forward to that.
Hang on, this is that round. This is this much-anticipated round. Is it Cypress Point?
Yeah, and Pebble Beach, yep. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Who's on the team?
No, Digger got dumped.
No, there's a group of us going, so yeah, it should be great.
Just last one on it, though. Physically, mentally, are you keen to, at this stage, keep going, even if it is just until the end of the year? You must start to think about what the next phase is.
Yeah, look, I'm still enjoying my riding, still enjoying it, and the body feels good, and... You know, as long as I'm still getting some reasonable opportunities, I'm happy to keep going.
He'd be a good poker player. He gives you nothing, Felgate.
Well,
nothing.
Think this could be what the next phase is, either Seven or sitting behind a microphone. Is that what you would like to do after you hang up the irons?
Yeah, I think media would be a logical area for me to go into. Yeah, it's... something I enjoy talking about racing and following it still. So, yeah, that's something I'd certainly look at for sure.
Could you be as controversial as a Matt Stewart?
No, we'll see you at the soup kitchen where we have our meetings, mate. That's what journos get paid. Hey, can I just reflect back a decade or so? I think it was the most beautifully orchestrated Melbourne Cup campaign via the Cox Plate was Fiorente. And I remember afterwards Gay Waterhouse came around to our office with the cup, and it was just such a huge thing for Gay to win with Fiorente. And you were entrusted with steering the prep to a degree as well, because Gay was in Sydney and she'd come down, and you had a bit of a role with Fiorente, not just as race day jockey, just to make sure he was absolutely campaigned right through perfectly for the Melbourne Cup via the Cox Plate. Is that one of the most satisfying campaigns of your career, what you and Gay and Fiorente were able to achieve?
Yeah, it was awesome to share that journey with Gay. She got me to do a lot of track work on the horse, and he was such a beautiful horse to be a part of. You know, he has such a beautiful temperament, and it was actually my first ride on him in the Melbourne Cup. I hadn't ridden him in a race prior to that. I got suspended and missed the Cox Plate. To share that Melbourne Cup, they're not easy to win with Gay in her first one, because she's you know, as we know, she's been such an iconic figure in racing. It was just awesome.
And I remember that each gallop was really important to just make sure he was absolutely cherry ripe. I know there was a lot of thought about just exactly what sort of work was required, and it was just a well-executed plan, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he was raced sparingly. I think he ran in the Dardo or the Fian, and then he might have raced at Flemington. I think he was a little unlucky, maybe the Turnbull, and then the Cox Plate, and then the Melbourne Cup. So he had a pretty light prep going into it. So, you know, there was a lot of thought and detail going into his training, for sure.
Mm. Ollie, when do you head off on the golf tour?
In a couple of weeks.
Oh, enjoy that. Just one last one on Amakura. Do you think she's so lightly raced that she's got the potential or upside to progress to some bigger races in the spring?
I don't think Chris has focused too much having a big spring with her. He thinks he wants to give her a nice spell and might chime in late in the spring carnival. But she's a lovely staying type of filly, got a lot of scope for improvement and so lightly raced. So I think there is still a fair bit of upside in her.
Hey, just one quick one. I'm fascinated by the crowds that are going at the smaller carnivals. What was the vibe like at Eagle Farm? Just beautiful track. I think it was a lovely day. Was there a nice crowd up there?
It seemed okay, a little on the quiet side, but
okay.
They were telling me up there that it was kind of their in-between day with the bigger day last week and, of course, the Stradbroke this week coming up. So, yeah, it was a little bit quieter than their bigger days, but track seemed to race really well. It was a good vibe up there. The surface seems much better now. They've got that Kaikuyu grass, which is a little bit bit more cushion and a bit more resilient. And I thought the track played really well and the racing was good.
You haven't got a Stradbroke ride?
No, I'm going to be in Melbourne next weekend.
Okay.
Good on you, Ollie. Well done again.
Thanks, guys.
Damien Oliver joining us here. Congratulations, Ollie, our greatest sportsperson for the past 50 years. That's from Jared. And Hariba doesn't like questioning. Now, leave him alone. What do you want him to retire? I don't think Hariba knows Ollie very well. I don't think anything we say is going to make Ollie's mind sway one way or the other.
He's a competitive beast, isn't he? Like, he
doesn't give anything away, does he?
Plays his cards close to his chest. He goes, gets the results.
Surely you'd go.
Even in that conversation, he's ruining the fact he's running second and he's had too many seconds and thirds this year.
And he doesn't want to talk about Cypress Pines, which has been in the wings for a year because he doesn't want to moz himself and have a fresh area on the first. So
he's right what he says though in regards to his placings, because Ollie's on 32 wins in the premiership, so he's currently sitting equal fourth with Mickey D and Damien Lane. But he's had 53 seconds and 40 thirds, which are the most of any of the top five or six jockeys. So he's been well and truly around the mark, as he said. Do you think he'll ride on through the spring carnival?
He's such a competitor, and I think he's a bit like Craig Newitt and a few of the others. He loves getting up to compete. It's not like he's over it, you know, and he's reasonably sound physically, and I'm not sure. He's not like Sam Malone off Cheers, who went straight from baseball and opened a bar. Like, I'm not sure what
one
Ollie
of the most obscure
champion sportsman who rolls into the next career type thing. So I'm not sure whether he has something absolutely set up to go to, you know, like talking a bit about the media and things like that.
I think he'd be a great commentator. I think if you could position Damien Oliver into, you know, that marquee Cup Week coverage and get his insight. He's won just about every major during Cup Week, you know, and to be able to bolt him into a broadcast like that and get his expertise, how the races run, et cetera, et cetera, he'd be a fantastic asset.
Well, but there's the other 50 weeks of the year as well, so who knows what. He's such a crafty guy.
Become a gun for hire.
He'll have something, but it's just, he just plays his cards.
But you'd like to see, it would be nice for the sport to be able to farewell. So he comes out and says, this is going to be my last spring carnival. So you can make something of it. But the other thing is that he doesn't want to be left sitting in the jockey's room while all the other riders are getting major rides in the Group 1s. I reckon that would be the thing that would eat at Ollie the most. Last spring carnival, he probably didn't have as many rides. He had a ripping spring carnival before that. So I think that's getting a Group 1 now to put his name back up in lights in the biggest of races. Surely it'll come down to the opportunities he's got and what he's got to ride during the spring, but you'd love to see him go around at least in one more spring car.
He'll have an indication now, Shark, about his support base, won't he? Like,
yep.
I don't know whether he's back in with Godolphin as he was, or, you know, the Danny O'Brien's been a good supporter. There's all these sort of stables. Whether this far out, Ollie would have a fair idea about whether he's going to be have a well-supported spring campaign, or whether things are withering a bit.
Well, you know, as he just pointed out, Chris Lees is a great mate. He's just ridden a Group 1 for him. Chris Lees has a lot of good horses in his yard. He gets the imports through Australian bloodstock, so there's always the opportunity of getting on something that's coming out here unexposed and with room to move. So yeah, he's got plenty of options. But as you say, it's a great time to be reminding people that you're there.
A bit of a sign of the times that the big, big ride for the spring from Perth, Amelia's Jewel's gone to the next big thing, Damien Lane, and not the first big thing, Damien Oliver. So that's an indication of the, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, bang, Ollie, straight away.
What did we make of the Oaks altogether, Sharky? Lightly raced, Amakura. You were very keen on Renaissance Woman, who's finished fourth.
Just to run.
Looked like it had every hope.
Yep, she did get a long way back, but Just a Run, I thought. We talked about Amakura on Friday, didn't we? And said, look,
the lightly raced
she was the one from the other form line. You know, there were the Kiwi group. There was the group that I guess we've come to know fairly well through sort of Sydney and Melbourne. Oaks, Renaissance Woman, So Dazzling, those sort of horses. And then you had the Sydney, the Adelaide angle with the Fair Assoir. But Amakura was the unexposed, good stable, lightly raced horse, bred to get a trip that you just thought, oh, maybe she could run a race at odds. The market probably told us that it was a little bit better than an each way, like a fluky each way chance, didn't it? The market really got behind this horse, Matty, on race day. Man, we all want to wax on about early market moves and everything else, but it's the best guide if you're talking about weight of money and watching the market for a lead, is race day.
Last 3 minutes, too.
Wow.
You know,
it's just the weight of money comes on race day after scratchings, after all the conversation from fields coming out. That's when you see the market really move. And you have to pay attention. And those that wait till before the race, they would have at least had something on Amakura.
Absolutely. I mean, we could talk about the Group 1 thing again and Oaks is... My strong feeling is there are very few Oaks or Derby races at all run in this country that stand up as legitimate Group 1s because of the nature of we don't breed them. Look at the VRC Derby, the horse of Waller's at one. I can't remember its name.
Manzois.
Manzois.
I would argue Sydney's Oaks and Derby are probably... They're genuine Group 1s.
They run at the better time of year for more developed three-year-olds, aren't
they? Well, that's right, and they are. And that comes back to a conversation that's been had many times about the distance of derbies at certain time of the year. In the spring, are the horses ready for 2,500 metres as new season three-year-olds? Maybe not, given the way that we've moved in our breeding market towards speed. Maybe we simply don't have enough of those horses conditioned to run a mile and a half at that stage of the season. Look, I think it'd be a lot better. They'd be better racers if they were at 2,000 metres in the spring.
What about Rio, the runner-up? By Rubik, second in the Queensland Oaks at 100-1. And then Martin Harley, that would have been a story as well, coming back from his broken neck, the Irish jockey's been riding really well up there. So there's nothing else you really want to take out of this Oaks other than the winner being the least exposed with more potential for upside?
A fairer suave. It's gone on a bit of a winning streak. Might have come to the end of it up there and the travel from South Australia to Victoria and up to Queensland might have just taken its toll and it didn't have the best of luck in running, did it? I think we know where Renaissance Woman sits as a probably tier two, tier three filly. Great placement and patience from Bjorn Baker to steady up after that Spring Oaks campaign, give the filly the time, and then target up at the Queensland Oaks. She got a win, she got a second in the Roses, fourth in the Oaks, but I think that's about her. I can't see massive leaps forward for Renaissance Woman, the beaten favourite out of this race.
SMSs here. Gee, the run of the race was a fair as of where it should have won. Not happy with the ride of John Allen. She was tough, being caught out wide, and she's done well. One for you, Maddie. Haven't we forgotten that Maddie Stewart wrote Damien Oliver off about 4 years ago? That's from our mate Reba. There's another one here.
Well, Ollie's last 4 years hasn't been as good as his previous four. So.
Sharky, you were very quiet during the Ollie interview. Why didn't you tell him that it wasn't a real Group One?
What's the point of that? I think we've established that it probably wasn't.
Yeah, well, we went through the honour roll of the Queensland Oaks on Friday. So in recent times, there haven't been that many
genuine Group 1 winners. Anybody who genuinely follow, and I'm not talking about people that just punt on the set, but if you love the sport and you follow the sport and what's going on, I don't think anybody, Maddie, that seriously follows racing in Australia could stand up hand on heart and say all of these Oaks and Derbies, the classics, in every state are genuine Group 1 race. I think if that's your read on it, you're reading it incredibly differently to everybody else.
They're Group 1s because they've got a Derby and an Oaks in their name and they've got a bit of history.
And I remember shouldn't be the standard.
Dean Lester, bless his heart, was talking about Johnny Get Angry, and we're talking about how Derbies are sort of an end within themselves. You know, that you don't assess them for the depth of the runner and whether they're going to win Melbourne Cups and Cox Plates. They are a destination for three-year-olds. They happen to have group status because of all the history and all those sorts of things. And that they shouldn't be judged beyond that fact. So that I think that's the way I see Derbies and Oaks in this country.
We'll take a break into the 9 o'clock news. We've got more to talk about. A few of the undercard races at Eagle Farm on Saturday were really good. We'll look at Flemington as well, and more SMSs. All that's still to come.
Placing their opinion on the line, it's The Verdict.
But now Stapardi, let's go. And as they reach the 300 metres, put up two lengths, almost three lengths on them. It's Stapardi wandering about a little bit, led by a good margin from Dolphin Skin, Cadigo, Sun Source battling away. But it's all Stapardi. Stapardi with Dean Yendall, three or four lengths in front, and will win well.
Feels like 2 months ago I said to Paul, jokingly, I think this is the best one you've ever had. You know, I haven't ridden before my time around this time. I hadn't ridden a lot for Paul the last few seasons, but early days I did. And, you know, I watched a lot of his horses go through the grades. Obviously, his Melbourne Cup horse and the sprint horse that he had. I'm someone in that. But, no, this horse is pretty good.
Well, it's a pretty big rap from Dean Yendall, who's been around the block a few times. It may have been the first weekend of June, but could we be talking about a horse that may well be a spring contender if they head that way? And as Dean Yendall said, this may be Paul Prushka's best horse. He did have a favourite in a Melbourne Cup too, by the way. Stapardi making it 2 out of 2. And it's great to have a chat to Paul this morning. How are you, Paul?
Morning, man. How are you?
Very well indeed. What's your take on Dean Yendall's effusive praise of Stapardi?
Well, it's easy to get wound up in the moment and itchy, but he's still got to improve a bit, I would think. And, you know, the beauty there is there's a lot of room to move. He can only build. He's not a horse that he's been wound up and pressurised to be a two-year-old. So, you know, I think that was probably the fifth time in the gates. Fifth time in the machines, and he hasn't seen all that much grass, so you know, he can only improve each time he goes out, you know.
Tell us the backstory, Paul. Where'd this horse come from?
Yeah, look, he came out of a paddock at St Arnold at Rocky Baldwin's. And it was just a, you know, he's a great, good size yearling and 2 year old, and it was just a poke along job, really. Like, we're never in any hurry to make him anything. It was just sort of just slowly build an engine. And he just kept sort of stepping up. And, you know, I was happy with all the foundations and that. And I thought, well, he's no good holding him back. He wants to be there. So we'll have a look at him. And the rest is history, isn't it? You know?
We can have a chat a little bit later on this morning to one of your part owners, Rick McIntosh, who had to do a bit of a swivel, watched his horse Stapardi and then get his head around calling the third race at Bendigo yesterday. So in a space of about 3 minutes. I can't find the Caulfield Guineas markets anywhere at the moment, but I imagine that that would be your holy grail with Stapardi. This winter series at Flemington that culminates in the mile race, you got a fortnight, then a fortnight, I think. Is that the first aim and then you'll worry about the spring?
Yeah. Look, I think he, to me, of course, it's what the horse wants to do a bit. But mental maturity is well and truly there. He's sort of not having to wait for him mentally any sound, So there's no real reason to tip him. He's sort of coping really well, and he's got his head around it a bit better than we think,
Is he a horse, though, that if you did want to go through this series and you finish up end of June, that you could give him a freshen up and keep him or get him back for a spring carnival campaign?
Yeah, for sure. He's incredible. His mind allows him to be tough, but he's a horse that just thrives on being around the stables. So I'm not going to, I won't get too wound up in it all. He'll do the talking, and he's certainly a horse that could keep plotting his way through. Colt makes it a bit easier too, They sort of you don't have to work them. You can just let them enjoy it. In and out. There's no reason he needs a letdown at all,
I seem to recall Royal Symphony went through these races and ended up in a gig. Didn't he come through this time of year with Dwayne Dunn in the saddle?
There's been a few in recent years that have sort of got a bit of a run on as a late two-year-old, and they've been able to slingshot into Vane Stakes and races like that. And
there was a Godolphin horse a few years ago that came through and ended up being one of the favourites in the Guineas as well. So it's been done before, Paulie. This is very hard to resist offers these days. They come thick and fast for a horse like Stapardi. I know you've got an eclectic group of bushies who own the horse. Have you getting a few phone calls?
Yeah, for sure. It's sort of been a busy 24 hours on the offers already. And but at this moment, we're just pushing ahead with our business, and I guess everything's for sale at the end of the day, but at this stage, we're all pressing on,
You're very tech-savvy with horses. I remember Surprise Baby treadmilling, and you knew how fit Surprise Baby was with the sort of measures you take. What the figures are you getting from Stapardi on the technology?
Yeah, well, he's not a horse I've sort of danced into that. Just being a two-year-old, I'm sort of not... it's a bit early to step into him like that. But certainly, he's a horse that he's had a couple of preps on the heavy sand. And, he's breezed up on the heavy. And he's a horse that sort of probably copes better than anything else I've got, So, which is, at that age, if they can move along and cope good with it, certainly they end up making horses. So he ticks that box. But two different things, isn't it? One's a two-year-old and one was a seasoned sort of four-year-old. No doubt this bloke's got a big heart, a big set of lungs. I did notice in particular, I sort of wanted to be there and just see how he pulled up, a couple of minutes after a race. And first thing I noticed, really hadn't opened his airways at all. So there's more there. There's more in the tank, and he's exciting enough without getting too carried away. He's got to improve, but he can only do that too,
Do you ever get excited? You're very laid back. Do you go home and go, gee, we might have one?
You do. You do. I love training animals, and you enjoy putting all the processes through and seeing that come good, So I certainly do, and main thing, I sort of don't like to get too wrapped up in it and just listen to the horses. So anyway, he'll do the talking. I no doubt I won't be able to stop him.
A horse that might have tried your patience, Paul, a little bit this preparation is Captain Envious. We saw him, make a big impact at Geelong last spring, and then he went and ran a fantastic third in the Queen Elizabeth. But didn't look to have come back the same horse this time around. Is there any reason why he hasn't sort of kicked on from that spring campaign?
Yeah. Look, I think he's a horse that came to me and he had his first prep. He was a horse that was pretty busy and doing things upside down. And, you know, his first prep here probably taxed him a bit, you know. Quick spell, probably didn't pan out. He probably needed a bit more time. I was certainly happy with him. He was nice and true and focused on his last start. He just got outsmarted and got beaten. But I certainly thought we're back on path there. Nice little spell now. I think we've found him again, you know. So sometimes that, you know, if they haven't been prepared to be those big staying legs, which he'd done his first prep, it can cost them. And I think that's all that happened, you know.
Hey, that little kid who wandered into your stable a few months back and said, "Hey, mister, can you give me a job?" And he never had anything to do with a horse. Ryan Houston, hasn't he hit the ground running?
Yeah, he's, you know, it's rewarding for me and him. And he's done the hard work, the kid, and, you know, just keeps fronting up. And you love seeing him, you love seeing him going good. And I'm certainly there to back him. He's done his hard yards with me and hadn't crumbled. And I look forward to Buddy seeing him grow and supporting him, you know. And certainly a lot of people out there are supporting him as well. So a big thanks to them. And yeah, he's good. You know, he's probably often I look at him and go, he's probably my best horse, you know.
He's a little baby-faced kid too, isn't he? If you can see him in a few. Hey, how's me old mate? Distrustful Award. Was that just a sort of a roll through the gears pipe open a first up?
Yeah. Nice sort of mile trial. It's pretty hard with a horse like him trialing him up to get him to a benchmark fitness, but yeah, pretty casual. And if they walk along in those longer trials, you don't sort of get much of a guide. So yeah, Sandown was the kickoff, and I thought that was nice. He got to the line solid, relaxed good. More importantly, he probably kicks off again next week over the mile. Might have been the 1800 at Flemington, 2000 at Flemington, part of the series. Should be somewhere about him now, you know.
Hey, Paul, for mine, one of the other highlights on Saturday was watching what Teofilo Starr was able to do to them on the flat, bringing back memories of some of the great jumpers who were able to mix and match winning jumps races and open staying contests. I know you're a good jumps trainer as well. How good do you think this boy could be, and how good was it to see that he can beat the best that we've got going around over the middle distance on the flat as well?
Yeah. Quite frustrating, because I've got nothing to match him. And, but I think it's great to see good horses jump jump when they're still at the peak of their career, not going backwards, you know. So I reckon it's a good effort, and it's good for jumping. And certainly you'll be a bit sheepish lining up against him, I think, you know.
No doubt about that. As will those who are lining up against Step Hardy the next time we see him. So is it in a fortnight, is it, do you think, he's back?
Look, he probably will. He's pulled up lovely. I can't find a reason, you know. I'm looking for one, but can't find one. So I guess it's just a matter of poking away for the next fortnight. And if he's on top of his game, still he goes, and we'll go from there, you know.
Good on you, Paul. Well done on the weekend.
Too easy, man. Bye.
He's by Artie Schiller, too. Yeah. He's a good local. So, I think he's out of one of David Moody's old mares.
Yeah, she was sold at Great Southern 2019 for $13,000. And then Greg Baldwin has sent her to... Obviously, to Artie Schiller. He tried Adelaide with it. She produced Scissor Step, who's group placed. So, and safely in foal, I believe, to Fierce Impact.
Well, there you go. I'm looking forward to your chat with Rick McIntosh, one of the part owners on the Big V, because I want you to ask, what's the figure Everything's for sale at a price. What's the figure that would buy a horse like this? What kind of figures would be bandied about for Stepati, who looks untapped, Sharky?
I would imagine they'd be trying at around 750, 800 at the moment, I think. Probably you may get north of that if you get multiple people on it. It's the sort of horse that you could get $1 million for, I'd reckon, off the back of that win.
And your ethos is just sell it.
100%. Every single time. Sell, sell, sell.
If you're... Depends on the syndicate, though, doesn't it?
There's 20 owners in it.
Yeah, 20 owners. You know.
Sell, sell, sell.
Not in this case, I wouldn't, because I think, and we'll get an insight from Rick, too, about the... I think there's two mates with two groups of mates, all from up the bush. One from Carnarvon or somewhere, who was sending Rick a video of them having, you know, celebrating. When you think of it like that, and if they sell it for, say, you get 900 grand or a million, and they get 25 grand.
So 40 grand or something.
Yeah.
Oh, but old mate owns the mare, and he's got a rich enough filly on the ground. He might have a fierce impact. The mare is young. No doubt she'll go back to Artie Schiller this year.
That doesn't excite me if I'm a bushy who's got a 40th of it, though.
Yeah. You keep racing its brothers and sisters.
Yeah, but they might be slow coaches.
Like Dawn Fraser's analogy. So,
yeah, I agree with you 99.9% of the time, Shark. But like we all remember the story of Canaan, so that's the one that's everyone's scorched by the story
Canaan's
of Canaan.
Not the only one. There's one every 5 minutes.
But this one, Bushy's careful trainer. You know, he's a very cautious trainer. Now, if I had 10, and I'm a sell mentality like you, but if I had a 20th of Stepati, I'd be looking forward to its racing career.
I don't know what he beat. They're all pretty unexposed. Mm-hmm. And the times, I'm looking forward to seeing what Daniel O'Sullivan
you
has to say.
Just had an agent text and say, tell Matt to shut up. I'm on this horse. I think there might be a few on this horse.
Tell the agent to text me directly. We'll come up with an arrangement, and then I'll just start singing from your song. But these bushies, you're idiot, you're mad. Imagine what you can buy if you sell a share in this horse. You buy a new Hilux.
What would an Artie Schiller colt be worth who wins a Group 1, Sharky?
Well, this is the last one is Artorias.
Mm.
So
you could have $20 million staring you in the face.
It's Artorias.
It's 15? A long, long way.
Artorias is by Street Boss, isn't it? Or Street...
No, I'm pretty sure he's Artie.
Flying Artie.
Oh, Flying Artie and Flying Artie's Artie Schiller. Okay, sorry. So it's a long, long way from winning a winter wet track 2-year-old handicap to a Group 1. But you would think that this horse, you know, kept in work, as Paul suggests, would be able to roll out in those early season 3-year-old races, Vane Stakes, races like that, McNeil's, with residual fitness on his side. The thing I liked about him was the obvious improvement he made as far as his race sense from that debut win at Ballarat, when he had his head half up and he sort of wandered around a little bit. That's the part, Matt, that you can't quantify, is that improvement between runs for these young horses. Some of them go and they're green as grass. Second time out, they're just as green. Others... it looks like a different horse. Mm. Like he joined in effortlessly, put them away, ran true and straight.
And beautiful stride.
Yeah, he's got a really nice
looked
stride.
Looked fluent.
And Rick tells me he's an absolute oil painting to look at. The Caulfield Guineas is a legitimate target.
After a performance like that, you've got to put that as an aim. The next few starts are obviously going to tell a lot more.
It's just cool to talk about a horse that's come from left field. Like on Saturday going to that meeting, I don't think anybody was thinking Stepati would be the talk of the meeting. Mm. Yes, concede that he had a winning chance off that debut run, but to win the way he did, it's just another reminder that the next good one could come from anywhere.
Yep. No, and Flemington in the inverted commas off-season is a more likely spot than anywhere else too, I reckon.
Interesting text that's just come through. Hello, boys. What do you make of the Price Kent first starter at Geelong in the first race, Blazing Harry, who won in a canter? And the favourite in that race yesterday was the horse that ran second behind Stepati on debut, and that was the Freedman-trained Just Press Send. So it got beaten behind Blazing Harry, a debutante. So it'll be interesting to see what the wraps are on that. So it is winter racing, but it's good to see a nice, young, progressive horse. It'll be fascinating to see how much money, if they are able to prize it away from the connections. Heartbreaking to hear he's going to the 1,400-metre two-year-old race at Flemington. I've got one heading in that direction. I don't think we can beat Stepati. Hi, guys. I'm surprised how excited you're getting. 11:49 down the Flemington Straight, not fast by any stretch, even on a wet track. Well, that's why I'd like to see what the ratings are, because sometimes times don't tell you everything. Visually is almost as important, because that was a soft win.
Well, times, overall times, I mean, what if they crawl, that you got to, it requires a lot more analysis than just what the overall time was. But Blazing Harry, by the way, is probably a talking point in the ongoing story of Stepati in the next few runs as well, because Blazing Harry, you would imagine, would follow a similar, is by Harry Angel. He, I would imagine, wherever Stepati goes leading up to that 1,600-metre Taj Rossi final, you might find a horse like Blazing Harry there as well.
He was okay, Blazing Harry. I don't know if we're getting carried away with him. He's won by a length, ridden out. There's a group of them behind him. It was okay. It was an okay win.
I guess it was just because the horse had the tie-in.
High-fiving and saying, wow, Blazing Harry. Yeah.
It was probably a more high-profile performance yesterday, and that was Winx's half-sister. We'll play that and have a chat about it in a moment. Before we do, I just want to have a chat about a few of the other races on the undercard at Flemington. We're going to have a chat to Nick Ryan as well, Munumek, who was great up in Brisbane. I mentioned to you, Sharky, and you kind of almost just swept me off your legs to the boundary. You were that dismissive about Teofilo Star on Saturday, and he was never, ever going to get beaten in that race.
No, he wasn't.
What is it? Does it say more about the opposition or how he might be a pretty progressive jumper who's been, I suppose, revitalised on the flat as well with his recent jump success?
Yes, I think there's probably an element of that. He's only had 18 starts. He's won a third of them. Most recently in hurdle races where he's won by whopping margins. Yeah, maybe he is a fast jumper that's still capable on the flat, clearly still capable on the flat. I think we could probably say, though, most of the opposition in that race are probably looking towards the obstacles as well as a place for the next win. It wasn't an elite field by any stretch, was it? But he won as he liked.
Shaya was the best back winner of the day. And
wasn't that just... Well, it and Verifier. Verifier was... Double figures into $5.
Yeah, David Gately tipped it at $12 on the Thursday.
And Nigel has been frustrated with lack of tempo. I've been on it every
time.
And he got the tempo this time.
And he's a big raw horse, though. He still was all over the shop. Robert Downey did a good job to get him home, even though he got suspended for over use of the whip. He's a horse that needs to be pretty aggressively ridden, watching him. And he copped the whip on the nose about 100 out, which I thought was going to put him off, but he was able to level out. I think the other highlights on the day were actually from the jockeys, Matty, and you mentioned this at the start. Sublime performances, Celine Gaudry, a double, and a double to Linda Meach, and also Blake Shin, who rode one of the best races you will see on Party for One. That was just an absolute brilliant piece of horsemanship.
Oh, totally. And look at the three jockeys that we're talking about. Celine Gaudry just gobbling everything up in her path, you know, just with this amazing attitude and just a really, really good jockey. Linda Meach has been, the other end of the female spectrum, has been the underrated female superstar.
She's a mum, don't forget.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, she's got... Look, don't underestimate that aspect of it. But to have kids and come back and then perform at this level. Wow.
And it's just it's a different story to the story of Jamie Carr and Holly Doyle and Rachel Blackmore and all the... She's got her own story, Linda Meach. She's been around for a long time. She's an amazing workhorse. She, you know, her greatness is about her resilience as much as anything else.
And durability.
She's not in their conversation, but she's in a different conversation.
Yeah, great job.
And then Blake Shin, who's just a massive value add down here.
He'll win the premiership, Blake, barring accident. I think he's now seven behind Jamie Carr, and he's made, I think, a a focus to do so. And he's going to be getting the best rides every week.
He's steely after a race, isn't he? You know, you listen to him talk about the win on that imported stage, Sharia. Just the way he spoke about it, very measured, very focused, very deliberate in his assessment. You get a lot out of his post-race interviews. Mm.
Yeah, it's all very honest. And yeah, he's got that interesting personality. He's very measured and direct and thinks about his answers. But Celine Gaudry, she's just
flying. She had a great book, didn't she, on Saturday? And good to get reward for that book.
Mm.
Leggio 10, that's a horse that can continue to hit the target during the off-season. Another good win back inside when you didn't want to be probably inside on the day, Matt. So switch back that way and won really well.
It's a good name, Celine Gaudry, isn't it? Sounds like a French movie star.
It does sound like a French movie star.
Starring
Celine Gaudry.
Yes.
As Mastuart's
wife. Who's the guy with the big nose, the actor over there?
Depardieu.
Gérard Depardieu, and in her maiden role, Celine Gaudry.
You've got a bit of Gérard about you.
Yes, you've got a big honker.
Golf, what are you talking about?
He's got a big... Well, the honker's not as...
He's got a
big one. Gérard Depardieu's got a, like a... What was that Steve Martin film with the bloke with the schnoz?
Forget about the length of the nose.
Roxanne.
There's a sort of a way. There's like a... You just,
oh, the no point backtracking now. You've schnozzed me.
You laugh,
Michael Colgate.
He also has about 15 bottles of red a day, Gérard Depardieu.
Well, that's, yeah, well, maybe there's a bit going on.
Grey River was disappointing on the weekend, Sharky.
Grey River was very plain. Yeah, very plain. I think a lot of people thought she was the bet of the day, and she was, ordinary. Not sure what came out of that.
And King Magnus, I love this horse.
He is so underrated,
I think. He is. You'd love to own a horse like King Magnus.
Charterhouse.
Charterhouse, a really good run. Yes, very, very good run.
It's probably the one that you want to take out of the meeting, is it, Sharky?
I think so, yeah. Towards a
outside of Stepan.
Winter Championship type performance. Yeah, I would say that'd be the horse.
Verifier's a nice progressive stayer. Don't worry about that.
Well, and the Busted and Young Sharia.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's just gotten there in the end, beating Wahini Toa, but for what this horse has done in Europe, to be winning short of 2,400 metres, I think, is an achievement. Nervous moments if you were part of the little plunge there.
Well, nervous moments if you were on Wahini Toa, as I know someone was at very big odds. Just needed one more bound.
Who's that? You?
No, not me.
Jackie.
Some other voice you might hear on RSN 927, though. That Price Kent 2-year-old that won the first at Bendigo was far more visually impressive than the Sunday one, in my opinion.
Price Kent, what, horse where?
Won the first at Bendigo.
Bendigo, okay.
So...
Gee, there's a lot of racing there, sort of find, isn't there?
WSD was in sparkling form again. Tipped us a 25-1 winner at lunch on Friday, then a 100-1 chance at Bendigo that ran second, beaten a half length. He's just killing it at the moment. I really should start giving his tips out over the airwaves. As soon as you do that, you'll go.
You should. Well, he's arguably...
Put him to the test. Put him to the exposure test.
Arguably, he's sort of nudging into that Josh from Horsham category, our friend on a Friday, and he's lobbing them at a better price.
So you're saying
moment.
That Josh from Horsham's under pressure to keep his spot?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that Big V might have a Josh from Horsham of their own in the form of Wine Shop Dave.
I think Uncorked Wine Sandringham's just a front for his gambling sort of enterprise.
Is there a gambling den out the back? That office seems... Well, I think
most of the bottles are empty. It's just like one of those facades.
Yeah, there's a false door somewhere. You know, you'll take a bottle off and this whole thing will rotate.
Like Get Smart.
Yeah.
I can't believe that last minute conversation just took place actually on air. We need to take a break. It is 29 minutes to 10 o'clock. After this, we'll catch up with Nick Ryan.
Military expert lifting Monomach down the outside, finishing seemingly full of running, and Monomach has taken over and kicked away near the line, coming clear from Charmy Baby, and Monomach's won from Charmy Baby, third Brigantine, a big run.
The rich get richer. Clint Hutchison could have a Stradbroke runner, and Monomach, he's been a revelation since coming over from Hong Kong, and Nick Ryan has done a masterful job, a great training performance on the weekend, winning with ease after a little freshen up, and Nick Ryan joins us this morning. Well done, Nick.
Thanks, Michael.
Gee, even you would have been impressed with that. He drew the wide gate, but the way he rounded them up and finished the last 100 metres, it was soft.
Yeah, very impressive. That was a good buzz. He's been a bit of a revelation. He's a good old horse. He's a bit of a marvel, and really, really well executed by Billy Egan from the wide gate. I thought he rode him a treat, but he won with ease in the end. It was a good buzz.
Was that the biggest win of your career in a lot of ways, taking one interstate, the interesting story with Munamek and so on? Was that the win of your training career so far?
Yeah, I'd say so. Definitely, to travel and win a nice race like that on a big day, for sure. Obviously, we've won the Let's Elope at Flemington on our home track and had a few nice winners, but certainly to have an impact in the Queensland Carnival, and it's been one of our goals is, obviously getting better horses and winning bigger and better races. So I guess in some way we're ticking that box.
He has been up forever, Nick. Can you replicate the length of preparation with any horse, or is he a bit of a freak in that he obviously just loves racing and loves a stable environment and loves work?
Yeah, look, I think I've had a couple of mates. Muhammad Ayas is quite the same. Round every week. But, some horses can cop it and some horses love the stable environment. And he's certainly one of them. The horses like him, once I get them fit, I just spend a lot of time on the treadmill, spend a lot of time at the beach in between training. And, it's not rocket science. If you can keep them happy, sound and fit, they'll give you their best.
Is he guaranteed to start in the Stradbroke? Will you back him up?
Oh, look, I think it's unlikely. Obviously, we'll accept and cross our fingers and cross our toes. If he gets in, he'll be no doubt backing up. Hearing from Aaron Mitchell this morning on the Gold Coast. So, but if he doesn't get in, there's a lot of other options for him. He could go round in the Wayne Wilson on Saturday. He could go to the Eyeliner in 2 weeks. He'll certainly, the Glass House in 4 weeks at Sunshine Coast will probably be his last run up there and his main goal. Hopefully he can get in, but look, it is looking unlikely, but who knows.
Is he close to the cutoff line, or is he a fair way down?
I'm not sure. I just see I see his rating's gone to 101, so I'm not sure if it's not enough to get him over the line, but I suppose we'll know acceptance tomorrow morning.
How many in the stable now, Nick? Are you building a clientele base which has got you continuing to expand?
Yeah, look, I've got 44 boxes now at Flemington. We're currently full, so we're around 85 on the books. I'm probably really happy with the size and of the stable right now. Now we just want to concentrate on, getting quality and as I said earlier, targeting some better races and aiming right up.
Have you got that firepower now? Have you got the bullets yourself and the clients that can help you go to sales, maybe Magic Millions and others, and buy that better quality?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I've got a really, really, I'd say this is the best crop of yearlings I've had since I started training. I've got about a dozen, and it's very, very exciting. They've been broken in. They haven't got the Flemington yet, but they're not far off. Certainly the first year that I've stuck my neck out and had a crack, so to speak, I've got some really nice imports that haven't hit the track yet. Look, in the next 12 to 18 months, hopefully, they can do the job and I can elevate even further.
How have you found that syndication aspect of, the new horses into your stable? The market's sort of slowing down. You hear things around the place that trainers, syndicators, a few shares here and there from still lingering from Magic Millions sales, which we haven't seen for a while. When it came to actually moving these new horses, Munhamek and co in the winners list. Did that make life easier?
Yeah, for sure. Look, it's you know, it's not easy going out and, you know, training, buying horse on spec and selling horses and getting rolling. But I'm a big believer of letting the results do the talking, and the easiest way to sell horses is training winners, and you know, it certainly helps.
Just the last one from me. You like going to the big country meets as well. Swan Hill Festival. What's how many trucks?
Well, we got beat up at Warrnambool, so it might be a little bit gun shy going to Swan Hill. But look, there might be one each day. In the office today, we'll run through a few things, and we'll see how they gallop tomorrow morning. So. Might just be the one truck each day, I think, Matty, but I don't think it'll be full.
Could Warwick Kappa end up being at Swan Hill?
He could. I just he's not Vobis Gold, so we're just going to have to check the restrictions on that Elfstrom Classic, whether it's Vobis Gold.
The restrictions on the Elfstrom Classic or the restrictions on the owner?
both, I'd say. Look, if Kappa doesn't go to Swan Hill Friday, he'll have a jump out Friday morning, go to Flemington Saturday weekend at 2-year-old 1,400. So there is two options.
And the Hong Kong connection, are we going to see more of that? Obviously, you've got Hutchie, who taps into Casper Founds and the crew over there. It's been very successful. Are we going to see more ex-Hong Kong horses in the stable?
Well, you can get on to Casper if he can keep sending them back Munamex. I'll be more than happy.
Well, you've been able to do it plenty of times, haven't you? So it's a tried and true system. So well done, mate. Congratulations on the win on the weekend, and fingers crossed, read the Stradbroke. If you can't get in there, I'm sure there's plenty more opportunity over the summer carnival or the winter carnival in Brisbane.
Yeah, thanks, fellas.
In the beauty of the Stradbroke that it's like a classic old handicap, there's a lot of discussion a week out, who's in, who's out. It's got a lot of talking points, as the big handicap races do. He couldn't possibly win a Stradbroke, Munamek, could he?
Well, you'd get in with 51 kilos.
Mm. He's not good enough to win a Stradbroke.
You could see him running a really good race, though.
He could run on seventh.
That was a big win.
I don't know if there's much between him and Cardinal Gem, is there?
No.
I think Cardinal Gem's a better
Cardinal Gem's probably got a little bit more room left to improve, whereas this fella is a listed kind of Group 3 floater, isn't he? He'll land a punch every now and then when the race pans out right for him, but I thought it was going to be tough for him on Saturday from that barrier. And given where he settled as well, he was awesome that last 400, 600.
It's the best win we've seen from him.
Yes.
Think about it. He's a winner. He's the best horse probably in the race with the most upside, but $2.80?
It's short.
Hawaii 5.0's are exciting up and
gets
coming.
Gets in with 49.5.
Converge is the one. He's the one, the Queensland Winter Carnival horse.
Yeah, I think he's the one.
Aft Cabin.
Can race on speed.
Royal Merchant, Rothfire, Prince of Boom, Gentleman Roy. Munamex, $26. I don't know whether that's he won't make the field, so he's a genuine 15-1 chance.
What price Cardinal Gem?
$12. Mm. I think Munamek, if he gets in, is a genuine 20-1 chance in the race.
Yeah, probably. Probably right. So we'll get final field tomorrow at about 9 o'clock, and the barrier draw is tomorrow evening around about 5 o'clock. Speaking of tomorrow, looking forward, Ethan Brown's going to join me in studio. So it'll be great to have a chat to Ethan about his recovery, his comeback, and everything he's been through as well. And a little later throughout the week, I'll be up in Brisbane. Maddie Nevitt's coming up with me, and we'll build up to the huge Stradbroke.
You're going there too?
Super Saturday.
No, I'm holding the fort. Do I have to do anything while you're up there?
Host the big V.
Oh. Okay. I thought I was getting an absolute spoil staying home.
Prince of Boom, I'm not sure if he's going to accept in the Stradbroke, but gee, he was a dominant winner. And talking of horses being backed, he was smashed on Saturday and never going to lose, Sharky.
It was a dominant front-running performance, wasn't it? And look, he's a decent sort of horse that is capable of a win like that on his day. A Group 2, though, that's shooting higher than I thought he was probably capable of. Again, that listed Group 3 sort of strong horse at that grade is where I had him. But look, good run before that in the Doomben 10,000, but he was just off and gone on Saturday's super win.
And how good is Foxy Frieda?
Oh, she's just super reliable, isn't she? Goes to the races, digs, fights when challenged. Kiku's a good mare at that standard, and she ran up to test her and to challenge her, and Foxy just kept putting the head down and getting the job done. The horse I am looking forward to out of that race, so I think 2,000 metres in time is going to be a great trip for Osmos, the French import for First Light.
Oh, yeah.
Another nice run.
Just on Brisbane, the weather forecast is for sunny skies all through the week, so there's going to be no wild curveball, soft seven or anything like that.
And the track is playing really well. As Ollie said, and we've seen in recent weeks, they've finally got it right up there. And I mean, it's the difference between South Australia and Queensland has been stark in the last 3 or 4 years. The prize money and the focus, and it's gone from strength to strength. It's a $3 million Stradbroke on Saturday. Plus, they've got the Q22 and the JJ Atkins as well. So
Q22 could be a bit of a good opportunity for something, let's just say. What's going to be going around in that?
Well, Fame's going there out of
there was talk that it's going to back up in the Q22, which will be fascinating to see how that three-year-old form, Quetor, you'd think would be going around in the Q22 as well.
Definitely.
Oh, it'd be nice if we had some proper horses in that age group, in that demographic. I mean, yeah. What's it worth, $22 million or something?
No, I think it's...
It was originally, remember when they created it?
It was
a million and a half or something. I'll have a look during the break. On the other side, we'll talk about Winx's little half-sister who made a very impressive debut yesterday. And we want to talk about a few issues as well and the international racing scene over the weekend.
Collantyre, City of Lights. City of Lights knuckles down. She ran to the lead and City of Lights comes away good and strong the last little bit, and she won nicely. City of Lights first.
Yeah, she's a filly that's shown nice ability from the start. Obviously, she's... she's high profile enough, being the sister to Winx, but she's done a good job there. She was always going to be strong at the end, and her trials have suggested that as well. But got a really nice ride, and I think a genuine tempo is what suited. She's probably a filly that'll step out to a mile in time. And big thank you to John Camilleri, who's obviously sent her our way, and she started off in good fashion.
Well, she's bred to be anything. I don't know what she beat, Sharky, but it's always nice to start your career when you've got a huge boom on you like that.
Well, she, I don't know about a boom. She's got a pedigree behind her. But
well, that's
about
the boom.
It.
She's wow, when you're related to the best we've ever seen, you're going to have a boom.
We see a zillion of those, you know, well-bred horses, million-dollar colts, whatever you want to call them, and some are good, some aren't. At least she's got off on the... It's a good story for the continuance of, you know, the Winx theme. Maddie, now she's off and gone and has become a broodmare herself, but little half-sister... John Camilleri sent the mare over to Japan to get covered by the great Deep Impact, who's just had another, although gone now, had another remarkable weekend. You know, a Cranbourne maiden winner, albeit probably the most significant maiden winner over the weekend, and Derby as well. So,
what's she worth? If
ridiculous.
If you were to staple a price tag to her left ear, what would it have written on it?
You'd think...
I wouldn't be stapling anything to her ear, but if you know what I mean.
Well, she'll never be sold, but you'd... Well, we're throwing around $1 million.
Isn't she worth more? But wasn't she worth $1 million unraced and slow?
I don't know. I don't know about $1 million, but now as a winner, with the win next to your name... If she... But the beauty is, she hits the line, and as Sam Friedman said, oh, she'll get a mile, no problem. She'll probably get further. We know the black type gets weaker as they get out in distance. She may well be worth considerably more if she can stick her head into a place in a stakes race down the track. But that's a long way from that win yesterday.
Where's Winx at these days with her offspring?
I'll tell you where she's at.
Well, you look that up. Maddie, I want to ask you about Kerry McAvoy. We saw Damien Oliver turn back the clock in the Group 1 in Brisbane on the weekend. K-Mac had a day out in Sydney.
Winning Verse moves alongside. Miss Hellfire moving up on the outside. It's Winning Verse. Miss Hellfire giving chase, but Winning Verse in front. Holding all rivals. Miss Hellfire with a late finish, late, but Winning Verse. It's been a real K-Mac attack today. Winning Verse, there's five for Kerry. Beat Miss Hellfire.
That's a big effort.
I like the call from Darren Flindell. It's been a K-Mac attack. Five winners, Metro Saturday, and he's been... What year was Brew? 2000, when he burst on the scene, and he's three Melbourne Cups, like Ollie, so it's...
Everest, Dominator.
Yeah, so...
But he's been
under the radar, yep, because J-Mac and others dominate the Sydney scene.
That's what I've thought too. I know he's about fourth or fifth on the premiership there, which about right. But he's as big a CV as there is in Australian racing, and he's not past his prime. So he's just been a victim of the runaway success of J-Mac, like so many others, hasn't he? And
has been.
And the kids, the Tyler Schillers and Dylan Gibbonses of this world I just think it was a good reminder time for Kieran McAvoy to just say, hey, don't forget about how good I am.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and when it comes to spring carnivals and Melbourne Cups, not only has he won three, he's been responsible for some fantastic rides in that race.
Mm.
Well, when it counts, you sort of have that, I don't know, it's a conversation going into spring. If you had a cup runner, who would you want riding it? Oh, I don't know, I always think of Kieran McAvoy at the top of that list.
In the last 3 years, has he been a tip-of-the-tongue jockey? He hasn't really, has he? He hasn't been a tip-of-the-tongue jockey in the last 3 years. He's suffered from a bit of the willow, been around for a long time, still really, really good, but flasher kids are coming along. Yeah, he's about a tip-of-the-tongue as a willow or I can't think of who else, but you know what I'm saying?
Forget Melbourne Cups and big races. We're talking about off-season Saturday. If Kieran McAvoy is available for an off-season Saturday run, you've got a horse in the race. You want him, don't you? You're pretty stoked with that result.
Do you remember when he first came back from Europe? There was a big hullabaloo in Sydney.
He didn't know how to ride properly in Australia.
Yeah. There was media kicking up there, loud types. And Ray Murray, he called him in and basically said, Kieran, what are you doing? You're missing the boat, mate. You've got to get on your horse here, you know, on your bike, on your horse, so to speak. So... I still remember that stunning sort of... I remember Michelle Payne was very annoyed on his behalf about someone telling a world-class jockey how to ride and when to, you know. But I think the race shapes changed in Sydney more his way than him having to adapt the other way around.
Outside of the domination of K-Mac, the first race was fascinating in Sydney on Saturday. Sharky, did you see a congregation? It was quinellaed by Chris Waller. It's the Schnitzel Response. I think it was a $2 million... yearling, the colt, which now makes it two from two. But I think the runner-up, which was the huge boom horse, Tutta la Vita, by the Autumn Sun, it should have won the race.
Well,
but they are two, and she's the filly up against the colt, two really nice horses for this time of year.
Yeah, it was a frustrating watch if you were on Tutta la Vita. Dylan Gibbons didn't do anything wrong. He just couldn't quite get a gap. He tried to sort of come around or go between horses. One was tiring and was going up and down in the one spot. Had to wait for the run to come inside. The eventual third horse, Stand Aside, was, you know, as two-year-olds do, they sort of wander off a true line a little bit, and it sort of wanted to drift back to the fence. Then it wanted to half drift off, and then it never really gave him the opportunity to put Tutta la Vita through. Eventually she got the run and really charged up late. I think the Autumn Sun, we're going to see, he's going to be one of those stallions, I reckon, that he's shown enough at two. Enough of his runners have come out and gone well. But as three-year-olds, particularly heading into the spring, I think his stocks will really soar.
Mm.
I think if you've shopped and bought an Autumn Sun yearling or you've bred to him this year, I think you'll be rewarded.
Yeah, and the broodmares went there. Because I'm not sold on how good he was, the Autumn Sun. He dominated
We didn't get to see that much of him.
We didn't get to see him in a Cox Plate when there was that argy-bargy about, come on, have a crack, Massara.
His wins were pretty bloody good, though.
He beat a field of absolute camels in the Corpiel Guineas.
Yeah, but what about his win in the Golden Rose? That was pretty stunning.
I think away from his actual racetrack performance, though, what he's got is depth of pedigree behind him. You know, he's a son
important
of
important pedigree too,
and his dam, as Minya, is a half sister to like Azamore. You know, you're talking about really good European horses, and that Redoutes over European French line. Like, it's worked before. It's got the depth of pedigree behind it. He won 8 of 9. I think there's a bit more than just, oh, well, he beat up on a couple of average horses.
Yeah, he's got the package element. Yeah.
As far as his genetics are concerned, he's got plenty to offer and plenty of opportunity to have influence.
Well, Chris Waller's got the favourite in the J.J. Atkins as well, Tanner Houser, which will be ridden by James McDonald this Saturday. So
you're on at a fat price, aren't you?
He tipped it to everyone last Monday on the verdict. We know that he's got the slipper winner, who we're going to see come back as a sprinter, Chris Waller. But these late season two-year-olds are going to be pretty exciting because we're all wondering what the depth of the three-year-olds, the two-year-old graduation into three-year-olds, because it didn't really take off last season, Shark, did it?
No, but look, each season you have to assess accordingly. And I think, as we just said, what we've got now is some stallions that do get late season two-year-old winners. Maurice had another late season two-year-old winner in Queensland on the weekend. So these are the stallions that we hope will produce those three-year-old, four-year-old, five-year-old types that get better with age over a mile and 2,000 metres. Well, they're doing it when we would expect their young horses to do it. And that's the exciting thing. When you're looking at races like Golden Rose and Guineas and things like that, it's not impossible for these late season winners to go and have a say in those races.
Time for the news. We'll come back after that and we'll look at the international racing. I'll get to a few more SMSs as well.
It's The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Matty Stewart, Mick Sharkey are in the house. And don't forget, there's a few SMSs I need to get to. I'll get to those in a moment. And continue to send us through your opinions, because each and every Monday we have the Simply Sensational Performance of the Week with thanks to Rubira's $100 dining voucher up for grabs for the best comment. Or you can have a crack at something. You can give us a future winner. You can tell us a run of the week. Whatever you think was simply sensational, maybe even not, we will read it out. And the one that Matt Nevitt deems as the best of the morning, yes, I'm just putting the pressure on Matt Nevitt, will win a $100 dining voucher to Rubira's. Hey, boys, I want to have a look at some of the international racing because it was a huge weekend. And, of course, the Epsom Derby, one of the time-honoured classics of world racing, was run on Saturday night at a different time. It was pretty early in the morning, which was good for those who wanted to stay up here. I should say it was pretty late at night, early in the afternoon, which was good for the Australians who wanted to see it. And once again, it was Aidan O'Brien winning his 9th Derby.
The big horse, King of Steel, August Rodin, is thrusting down the near side. August Rodin begins to get up, and August Rodin gains redemption in the Derby. August Rodin, a 9th Derby for Aidan O'Brien, a 3rd for Ryan Moore. Wardown, King of Steel, what a run in 2nd.
We were very lucky. He came out of Guineas very well, and his training was very good for this. Wayne has been riding him and all his work. Rachel rides him out, and listen, Wayne was delighted with him, you know. So Killian leads him in his work, and Martin leads him in his canters, but they were all very, very happy. But listen, you still come here, and if it doesn't go your way, it doesn't go your way, and we had to be ready to accept that. But I'm so delighted for the horse, Ryan, and everyone else.
He is bred to be a Derby winner, Sharky. Deep Impact, and out of... what was the good Coolmore mare?
Rhododendron.
Rhododendron, yes, who's closely related to Magical, isn't it, as well? And the redemption in the call was the fact that it was absolutely unsighted at his previous start, and he had been the long-time early Derby favourite.
Yeah, he was in 2,000 guineas. He was sent off favourite, a very short favourite for that race. He got into a little bit of strife early and then just basically resented anything that Ryan Moore asked him to do in the run, and was beaten 22 lengths. And if you follow the European racing podcasts or commentary, he was the mystery of this year's Derby race, because on ability, it was there in spades, but on the first up run, it was... and you could hear some of the people on Nick Luck's podcast and whatever else, all the people he talked to in the lead up to the Derby, nobody knew what to do with this horse because of that run. And how forgiving can you be of a horse beaten 22 lengths? It was a terrific win. Arguably, though, the run of the race surely was owned by King of Steel, who was first up for 220 days.
And is 100 to 1 shot.
Was it Roger Varian who trained?
Yep. Yeah, Roger Varian. Yeah, son of Wootton Bassett. So he was last seen in the Futurity behind when he finished 7th of 8 behind Auguste Rodin. So he's lobbed here first up at a massive price and gone within a half a length of winning a derby.
And Rouget won the Prix de Jockey Club.
Oh, what about that win?
Mm.
That absolutely smoked up.
Do you reckon it's looking like the better derby?
Maybe. Ace Impact, the way he quickened from the back of the field in that race. That was something else. And didn't just get there. He charged away from them and remains unbeaten, I think, off the top of my head.
What's the protesters are out and about again. They've been threatening. There's this new mob, animals something or other. There was a photo on social media of two of them who had super glued themselves to a jump at some minor English track over the weekend. Is it just because there's a radical new mob who've got invested in it, or is there something... Why is the anti-racing sentiment ramped up in the UK this season? What's happened to intensify the scrutiny?
I think they're getting a lot of media coverage as well. Mm. So, you know, pictures of them, it's unfortunate. You'd rather them almost go unheard of. There were 30 arrests, I think, at the Epsom Derby. There were people running on the track. I don't know whether it really impacted the running of the day that much, but there seems to be a lot more willingness to report after what occurred at the Grand National, every minor infraction from any type of protesters, which emboldens them even more, gives them more want to get the media coverage and get out there.
Well, they were warned going to Epsom. Like that, it was, there were mediation attempts, there were meetings, there was emails back and forth, but it was established that everybody was working in the best interest of the animal, even from the side of the protest. They acknowledged what Jockey Club's trying to do and British horse racing is trying to do to protect the animal and limit risk. And they were warned that if you interrupt or disrupt the races, you'll be arrested. So,
but, I mean,
they go there. And look, they were invited to protest peacefully and they were given a location, I understand, where they could do that. There's a point, though, where it's...
I wonder, tomorrow we'll have a chat to Lee Mottershead to get his full wrap-up on the Epsom Derby Carnival, but I wonder, arrests these days are just a misdemeanour for something like that. There's not really much that you're certainly not going to go to jail. But I wonder if there are a huge fines. You know, you get, what is it, Nev, if you run on the MCG, it's something like a $10,000 fine. So racing, you would hope, would have a similar fine process that if you want to run onto a racetrack, not only will you become arrested, you'll also be hit in the hip pocket.
Is it Animal Rising is the name of the group? I haven't heard of them before. So whether the anti-racing sentiment in the UK is no different than it ever was, but it's, they're just dealing with this one group that's just sort of marshalled itself. But it just seems to me that if that's not the case, what has been brewing in English racing that's caused a tipping point with the protesters where they're being a lot more up and about and active? I can't think of, the Gordon Elliott photo of a couple of years ago really set racing back a lot when he was sitting on the dead horse. And
well, there were a lot of falls in this year's English Grand National, which wouldn't have helped with the public.
I think Animal Rising should get over to Kentucky. They might have a bit more of a platform over there with what's been going on.
Outside of the performance of the winner...
With the 13 dead horses.
Which you like to talk about every day. Outside of the performance of the winner, the interesting part of it was that they ran the Epsom Derby at 1:30 in the afternoon. It's the earliest point or the earliest time that the Epsom Derby's ever been run because ITV had to cover the FA Cup final and they didn't want to clash with the FA Cup. There was some debate about whether they should run the derby at half time during the Epsom, during the FA Cup, but the Whirlpool tote holdings were down 36%. And a lot of the reasoning given is because the race was run so early in the Saturday afternoon, £6.7 million last year compared to £3.7 million this year, which is interesting because there's always been debate about what time the Melbourne Cup should be run. And if it was run later in the afternoon on Melbourne Cup Day, would that increase the turnover in the race?
The French and English have a knack of running feature races early anyway. Like, you know, you look at the races at Chantilly or Longchamp or wherever, or Goodwood or somewhere, and you go, you start at the seventh race and work your way back, and you get to a race two or three, and you've got the feature races. But how extraordinary is this? A sign of how where racing's positioned, that the Derby gets bumped by the soccer match. Like, that's just...
I think a lot of it was driven with the free-to-air broadcaster had the rights to both. And obviously there's going to be more eyeballs watching an FA Cup final and the build-up to that than...
Why were they scheduled on the same day?
I think the FA Cup was put on that race day. I'm not sure why.
You'd reckon that would be a red flag collision, though, when you're planning things. You go, hang on, well, this is Derby Day.
Again, it's a bit like the AFL here. They're the behemoth,
But the AFL's not going to put a game on Melbourne Cup Day.
No.
No, but do you remember when there was the grand final draw? It then was put on a week later on Turnbull Stakes Day, and racing moved the Turnbull Stakes meeting to the Sunday. So that
it's a bit different when it's the Derby, though, as opposed to a Turnbull Stakes meeting. Like, the Derby's... Is it the biggest thing that happens in
football? But you're saying that the Football Association over there, or whatever the title is, would go, all right, the FA Cup's going to be scheduled for this Saturday. We better check what race meetings are on that Saturday. I don't think they would think like that.
Well, anyway.
I think they just do their own thing.
Well, it's never happened before, I would imagine, so it's not like it's...
I'll ask Lee Modishead tomorrow when we get him on. How, SMS coming through, how important is that horse in regards to Coolmore Sharkey from its breeding and now
very
as a Derby winner?
You know, another son of... Deep Impact to join the Stallion roster eventually. He's a really athletic horse. He's a Derby winner. Yeah, it's fantastic. Great for their operation.
Hang on. The FA Cup was moved because of the World Cup this year. So that's what an SMS has come through from one of the listeners.
But surely they could find, of the 365 days of the year, a different day. You know, like it was the one that got... that had to adjust, not the Derby. Shouldn't they have gone, well, let's a bit of reverence for the Derby. Well, let's have the FA Cup on the Sunday or the next Saturday or the Saturday before, surely.
I have no idea, but we will raise it with Lee Modishead. What it didn't clash with was the day before and the dominance of Frankie Dettori, who we mentioned a little earlier, his phenomenal farewell goodbye tour, his farewell fairy tale goodbye tour continued to roll on.
Racing down towards the final furlong is Amelie Upjohn, so unlucky in the Oaks 12 months ago, stumbled at the start, making absolutely no mistake this time in the Derby Coronation Cup, another Group 1 for Frankie Dettori. She's kicking away his soul sister in the hands of Frankie Dettori. Another farewell classic win for Frankie. Why is he giving up? He wins on soul sister.
It's mental, I'll be honest with you. I thought we had three Group 1s, three good rides. To have two in the bag already with a Derby to go is crazy. I'm stuck for words, I'm sorry.
It's not often Frankie stuck for words. That was his seventh Oaks on Soul Sister, and of course he won the Coronation Cup on Emily Upjohn. He didn't take the Derby, Sharky, but I don't think even Frankie Dettori, who's had the most remarkable life, would have pictured his farewell year panning out the way it has.
It's been incredible to watch, and maybe there's the element of he's on a roll. He's been riding well right from the start of the calendar year. You start to pick up those extra rides. You know, he's getting the support from Gosden's and even Aidan O'Brien. He won at Haydock, an important race with Little Big Bear a week ago. So he's doing it everywhere. But those two wins, Emily Upjohn, to see her return, she should have arguably won the Oaks last year, to come back on the day first up and just drop on them like she did in that race and steam away. And it should be better for that run too. Soul Sister was great. Similar situation, just cruised into it from the back of the field, let down and ran away with that Oaks. Yeah, two really, really good, well, fillies, as they say, in Europe, and great rides from Frankie. It's awesome watching. I know there's already been a doco about him, but I really hope they're sending a camera or something around with him on this last lap to capture these wins and maybe the behind-the-scenes stuff and that post-race. Oh, my God, I've landed another one. You know,
how big is he going to be at Royal Ascot, the week of Royal Ascot?
Is he back on Inspiral? I'm trying to think of the big ride he might have at Royal Ascot. Inspiral will be the one, and isn't she the one that he got into strife for with John Goslin, and they had a fight.
Testing my memory a bit, but yeah, it might have been.
Because Stradivarius is retired, I think.
Royal Ascot's a great meeting to go to any year. But this year, I think, if you're an Australian you've ever contemplated going and you haven't got yourself sorted out, it's not too late to make a last-minute dash over there with the Aussie runners and to see Frankie Dettori's last Ascot Carnival. It's a moment in racing history. You almost want to be a part of. If I had some spare cash and I could talk my wife into it, I would go.
You got to stop buying horses, Sharky. That's your problem.
Well, I need to be selling the ones that I've got. That's the problem.
Speaking of docos, I watched the golf version of Drive to Survive over the last few days. Oh, I can't remember.
Surely it could be called Drive to Survive as well, given the drive ball.
Pretty full on.
But
can racing have...
They're making one. They're making one about the All-Star Mile, which is due to come out next year, or the build-up to the...
Is it going to be like the Cup?
It's going to be, I think, before... Well, I tell you what will be interesting is that Jamie Carr is part of that. So, and
why would you make it about the All-Star Mile?
It will, the horses that in the build-up, it will be used as a promotional tool, I understand, in the build-up to next year's running of the All-Star Mile. So they were following the I'm Thunderstruck connections. They were following Jamie Carr. They were following other trainers as well, I think Lindsay Smith. So they've got the storylines there to make a compelling documentary with Jamie Carr's fall, if you can get the behind-the-scenes access in the interviews and, you know, the sad demise of I'm Thunderstruck. You've got the elements of the drama that you want for a documentary like that to succeed and cut through a racing viewership.
Maybe.
The All-Star Mile doesn't exactly...
It's not so much about the race. It's about the participants, though, Shark, I think. It's not about that.
I think that's still a racing doco. If it's going to be as big as Drive to Survive and get non-interested people interested, it's got to be. And I know I'm going to say it starts with G and ends in Earls. It's got to be about the females around the world.
Well, who's Jamie Carr?
Yeah, I know, but she's part of a doco.
Don't you think she'd be the star of it?
Well, anyway, we've had this discussion many times. I've got my own view about the only racing story that will cut through, and she's part of that.
I'd like
but she's not part of it. Yeah.
I'd like a doco about Matt Stewart.
After Dark. Matt's new wardrobe.
I don't know how long it'd run. Hey, we need to take a quick break. On the other side, I'm going to get a lot of these SMSs which have come through, and Damien Lane, he almost did it again in Japan.
This is The Verdict.
Here comes Songline. Songline bursting down Snowmeister late along the inside, setting fast. Songline goes back to back. Songline wins out from maybe Serifos.
Songline going back to back in the Arima Kinen, and it was almost another Group 1 for Damien Lane in Japan, finishing runner up. And he also had a double on the day, Sharky. So he just continues to tick those boxes over in there, where he's fast becoming a superstar of the sport.
Oh, he'd be sick of seeing Songline.
Yeah.
Last time it was on Sadashi, the white horse, and this time on Serifos, who's a mile championship winner, just falling short of Songline, who's just racing in phenomenal form at the moment in Japan, winning her last two at Group 1 level.
Is Equinox going to do something in the next few weeks, or is he on ice, or what's he doing?
I want to go and see this
horse. I think there's
I miss Flightline. I need Equinox.
I think I need to be I need to be an Equinoxman.
All right. Damn it. Where do we have to go? Where are we catching the plane to?
Felgate will have Japan. Some rort on. He'll have some Japan Cup trip.
A few SMSs coming through here. Hi, guys. Royal Ascot 2012. I saw Franca win the Queen Anne on the Tuesday. So you think win the Prince of Wales on the Wednesday. Frankie's last win for Godolphin on Colour Vision in Gold Cup on Thursday. Black Caviar on the Saturday. Will that ever be topped? Stephen Richmond.
Pretty awesome,
never
from
Steve.
An Australian point of view will that be topped.
That's insane,
that's
Richard.
Unbelievable.
Good morning. Is there any chance of Moonee Valley getting Songline over for a Cox Plate? The turn of foot late in the Group 1 mile at Tokyo yesterday was nothing short of sensational.
If Songline came for Songline a Cox has plate, already won two as the mother of Sunline, the previous Songline.
If it came for a Cox Plate, it would start $1.50 and win by 110 billion lengths.
Matt Cain is hopeful of getting some Japanese representation in this year's Caulfield Cup.
I think it's a stretch, isn't it, at the moment with the restrictions, the veterinary restrictions? That's why they haven't come.
Takarazuka Kinen later this month. We might be when we see Equinox Shark.
Speaking of, and then there is still a chance maybe of a Japan Cup appearance as well. Speaking of MRC, tomorrow morning they've got their first horses, which will be having some gallops on the new Caulfield track. Not the inner track, the re-renovated outer track, which is going to open in a couple of weeks, I believe. So we'll follow that tomorrow. Hey, get serious, Matt. 100 times more people watch the FA Cup final compared to the Derby, and probably 100 times more money is punted on it. They're not going to move that.
Yeah, but it was already moved because it was already on the move because of the World Cup. So it was floating. It had a period where it was floating and had to be repositioned, but the Derby wasn't. So
you're kidding yourself with fines. No one pays them anyway. It's just because protesters are idiots and the media love that stuff that they cover them. That's from Troy. Hey, Michael, simply sensational performance of the Rick Chris Lees and owners forking out $400 for Ollie's flights.
Yeah, it was $4,000 to get Bowman and $400 for Ollie. So you went with Ollie.
That's great. Best investment anyone has made over the weekend. Hayden,
that's a
Hawthorne.
Really good call.
Your clubhouse leader there, Hayden. Sharky, this one's for you. One side to keep an eye on, fellas, is Calix.
Well, Calix is doing really well in Europe. A lot of the talk has been about Blue Point. Blue Point's coming back this year to Australia. Calix was here and is not coming back. So there are some Calix offspring around. Whether that translates completely, they don't always work in Europe and work here at the same time.
Speaking of Blue Point, was interesting that Colin McKenna decided to create a racehorse and not a breeding horse when he sent Jamaica to Gayarth for the last breeding season. You know,
absolutely.
We were having that chat about why is one more. He just said, well, you know what, I'll go the cheap good horse rather than the just a story that came on Friday, and it's a devastating one for Steve and Jess Pateman. This has been going on since 2017. It was a cobalt positive to Sir Walter Scott back in 2017. It was 12 times the legal limit. They have received 11 months and they will not be appealing because they said it's been an emotionally, financially draining exercise and they just don't want to keep fighting. Starts on June 9, finishes just after the May Carnival next year. Another little blow to Steve Pateman because he can't ride or train. All over a cobalt positive. There was some unusual scenario about the evidence given at the time and so on. You know, I hope they use their time well. Jess is every bit as champion an equestrian as Steve is a champion jumps jockey. Maybe he could fill the time by doing a bit of equestrian for a while. My understanding is I'll double check it, but that Jamie Carr may have bobbed up at a cross country meet during the week in a minor event. On the weekend.
Oh, she was riding.
Probably shouldn't. I'll double, triple check that, but that was my information was she was going to compete in a little equestrian thing. But that's just, for Steve Pateman, this is...
What was the argument that they used? Was it they said they didn't obviously do it on purpose? Were there extenuation? Like, it's gone on for so long, to be honest, I've lost track of it.
No, well, there was just a bit of grey area about the state they were in when they gave certain evidence and things like that. So they were on holiday, and I don't know whether that factored into the penalty, but, gee, it's a big whack. Hopefully they will use the time well and, you know, blessing in disguise type thing, a forced layoff. A lot of people who have been through it in racing have somehow found it. Look at Kieran Maher. That was a turning point in his career when he spent that time overseas.
We had an SMS a little earlier saying what's going on with Archie Alexander, and in a similar situation, Archie's actually been suspended or disqualified. I think it was for a period of, was it 3 months, Matt? I'll need to double check because it was a build-up of a number of incidences that had occurred, and then there was a situation where if you get another positive, which Speaking to Archie Alexander was a situation where it may have been, we've spoken about before, with stable hands and an inadvertent administration given, but it triggered a three-month suspension. So Archie's gone overseas, and we'll have a chat to him when he comes back. So that's why you haven't seen his horses that he usually trains in his name. He will be back a little later. I think he's got another 3 or 4 weeks or another month to go on that. So we'll have a chat to him when he does come back. Did you see Lucky Swain S win again in Hong Kong?
He
equaled the record of the most wins in a single Hong Kong season with 8, and he's going to have a crack at another race they are contemplating so that he becomes the most successful horse in Hong Kong history as far as number of wins in a singular season, which would be 9. Disappointing that they've made the call that he's not going to come out for an Everest.
That is really disappointing. He would have been that international flavour that I guess the race longs for, Matty, and I would have loved to have seen Lucky Swainess and, you know, V Giga Kick, V I Wish I Win, you know, it just adds that wild card when you think you know where all of the locals sit, you parachute in this Asian star. Just a shame we're not going to have that opportunity.
Well, it just goes to show that money doesn't buy everything. Like, they, you know, $20 million. If you're going to try and justify whacking on $20 million, what you have to achieve is you get a Lucky Swain S. There has to be some justification for it that we can't see, and it didn't get Lucky Swain S. So, what's the point?
That's right. But there has been some debate about the New South Wales prize money. I would imagine either this week or the week after we are going to get some clarification about where the prize money sits for Victoria, because they need to announce that and the confirmation of other programming as well. So it's getting late in the year. You would imagine that this will be occurring pretty quick, hopefully this week.
There's been a real response to Russell Balding, the chairman of Racing New South Wales, sent a very direct note about New South Wales's motivations and everything that's happened. It's got a lot of people talking. So it's worth having a little look at that from Russell Balding.
And it looks like it's a fait accompli, as it's been reported by John Stensolt, that the tab will be the Melbourne Cup rights holders for the 4 days. So it's a watermark moment, really, a landmark moment, because it's the first time that there will be a betting agency which has control of the TV rights. So they will have all the rights, digital, international and local, and then they will put out the tender to the major free-to-air networks for a bidding process as to who will actually cover the 4 days in the Melbourne Cup Carnival. So it'll be fascinating to see how that plays out.
Absolutely.
Gents, we're out of time.
Thanks, Michael.
Always good to see you in here, Sharky. Good luck, and we will see you on Friday. It'll be an abridged version on Friday. We will have you looking at the MetroCard on Saturday in Melbourne, and I'll be up there, and NAFEX will be your find us all the Stradbroke winners as well.
I'm off to the Inglis Great Southern sales. The inspections start today.
And you just spied something on the digital auction as well.
The rise and rise of the digital auction over the last few years, there is a 10% share, Matthew Stewart, of Scalapini on the Inglis digital auction.
Is he running in the Straddy?
I think he is.
Sign me up.
Ben Thompson to ride. So what should that go for, Sharky?
I don't know what it should go for.
He's an older horse, isn't he, Scalapini? Like, is he a 7 or 8 year old? Or am I completely wrong?
No, he is. So the share, currently lot 185 on the auction, $9,000, 10% share of Scalapini.
When's it end?
He is an 8-year-old. It ends Wednesday afternoon.
Okay, well, we'll follow that. We might even have a chat to the trainer tomorrow, some of the connections. So Scalapini, you can buy a 10% share in a horse and have a runner and a group one in a couple of days worth $3 million.
Yeah, well, that's the hook, isn't it? Don't forget Rick McIntosh coming up on the Big V to tell a bit more about the story of the big Flemington winner with Paul Prusker and a few of the characters that are involved.
Rick Mac, he's not a money man, is he? He wouldn't sell out. He'd want to have the glory and the thrill.
He told me, feel free to offset the conversation. We can talk about a few of my slow ones. So he has got slow ones.
Good on you, Matty. Looking forward to coming up on the Big V. We'll take a quick break and we'll try and find you some Monday winners.